This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Known and Never podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and this week we are looking back at a disappointing point at home to an on-the-beach Brighton, where the Clarets once again, for the umpteenth time this season, pressed that self-destruct button and found yet another ludicrous way to lose a football game. Time is running out for the Clarets, and in the last week we have thrown away two very good chances to get two good wins on the board. Almost certain now that the Clarets were relegated to the Championship. I'm joined this week by regular panellist Tom Whittaker, who'll be going over that game at Turf Moor and wondering what's next for this Burnley side. So, without further ado, let's go. Tom, how are we?
I'm not so bad. A bit worse after that intro, to be honest. It was a bit depressing, but...
Yeah, sorry about that. I was in the green room listening as well. I was recording that, and I didn't intend to be that down in the dumps about it, to be honest, because, you know, there are some things to be positive about the club. I think if you write this season off as being a bit of a difficult season, we've got investment, and yes, we know it's a succession plan. We know that it's based on success, but we've got some investment there. We've got owners who are ambitious and want to do some things. We are going to do well in the Championship next season. We've got a club that consider themselves to be a Premier League side who have had to drop down a division, whereas for many years we were considered to be a Championship side batting above our station, essentially. So there are some general things to look forward to. It's very difficult this season to not get bogged down in the detail of a very miserable season. Tom, another key game at Turf Moor, another must-win game and another opportunity to try and get some of those points reduced and get the deficit clawed back. And the Clarets once again failed to take it. At this point, I can't believe that we're finding more creative ways to just shoot ourselves in the foot here.
Yeah, I think addressing the sort of key game thing first, it didn't really have that feel to me. I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, not in the grounds. You know, it felt for the Wolves one. You know, after we got the win against Brentford, we got a good point against Chelsea. It felt like there was a bit of, oh, you know, if we're in this, we can do something there in Wolves. But I didn't go for the Everton game, but obviously that was a bad result, and it felt to me like most people had given up at that point because it didn't feel like there was much anticipation in the build up to me for the Brighton game. It was one that you thought we might get something out of, but it didn't feel to me like everyone was thinking, win this and we're back in with a shout kind of thing. I think people are kind of throwing in the towel now. And it, to be honest, on the pitch, it didn't have that feel either, did it? You know, first half, I think we were the better side.
No, that's fair.
We missed two great chances in the first half, but, you know, the second half was a complete non-event, really. We've got a lucky goal, or is it? I mean, not lucky in the sense that Brian Hill's worked hard. He's close to keep it down and he's taken advantage of the mistake, but as you say, from that kind of position, you think it's one of those games where nothing's happened, and as at Everton last week, you know, a kind of freak goal is going to settle it, and then we give it a bit of anything you can do, we can do better, and decide to kick one in our own net under no pressure whatsoever.
I think it was one of those when we did score that goal, like you say, there was a it was very fortuitous. You know, there's a good deal of luck involved in them. But as you rightly say, credit has to go to Brownhill. Then he got brought on to do a job. His fresh legs certainly seemed to do a difference. And it was his closing down of that defence and pressing that ball and that forced the keeper into making a clearance that was nowhere near on, to say the least. And it bounced back off him and goes in the back of the net. And at that point, I'd said to my dad, like, it feels really nice to finally be on the right side of that, to be the ones that are benefiting from a bit of a lucky twist. And then just, I had my head in my face, in my hands for like a good 10 seconds when the goal went in, and it went, I just couldn't believe what I'd seen, that at this level, considering that we have footballers that are supposed to be at the peak of their game, playing in a highly competitive league, in a season where points are everything, would just lose their concentration to that extent. I mean, it's a mistake, of course it is, but is it fair to say that to me amplifies some of those key values that are missing, that discipline, that concentration, that commitment to making sure that every, you know, you don't do, I see it so much, Tom, across the pitch, lazy passes that don't quite hit the man, somebody just like toe poking it instead of putting the foot through it. And like you say, just that decision making from Muric for the equaliser was just shocking. And for me, that's, it's just not there in this side.
I don't know if it's the decision making necessarily. I mean, Burs maybe holds on to it a bit too long. We have got this tendency to go backwards and sideways when we could be looking to go forward, and that was the same at 1-1. You know, we weren't trying to score a second goal, or it didn't feel like that anyway. But I think, you know, people have overanalyzed this, and I was saying to my dad, maybe she'd put that back pass between, you know, to the side as opposed to between the posts. That's the sort of golden rule that you get told. But at the end of the day, it's just rubbish football from Muric. Like, I don't think you can put it down. You know, Bellamy's saying, oh, it's all our faults, that's the way we're told to play. It's nothing like that to me. It's just, like you said, it's just a lack of concentration. It's just a mistake. I don't think it's something that you put down to the way we play or anything like that. I think any team in the world could play a gentle back pass to the keeper in that position. But I suppose you're expecting to maybe hoof it up the pitch as opposed to having a touch. But I think you can overanalyze that a bit too much and say, oh, it reflects this and that of our season. Basically, it's just a complete brain fart, and it's one of them, as you said, mistakes all over the pitch on Saturday. If Brun Larsen hits the target from 2 yards out, if Fofana doesn't miss another open goal,
yeah,
if two or three,
he was bad on Saturday.
Yeah, he was really poor, and you know, he wasn't the only one. So it's one of them. When you're a keeper, you know, if you have a bad touch on your keeper, it's a goal. And if you're a midfielder and you do that, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to lead to anything. So I think, I don't think it's necessarily, it's the way we play for that. It's just bad. Just a bad bit of football from Muric, and it's cost us. I suppose it's amplified a bit by the fact that that's the second game in a row where he's made a mistake and it's cost us points. I'm sure we'll get onto the kind of the goalkeeping debate on here. But to me, that's not kind of indicative of the wider problems we've had this season necessarily. I think sometimes we've had problems where it's been players who aren't good enough to play this kind of football. I'm thinking of maybe Brownhill's red card against Crystal Palace.
Mm.
I'm thinking of the bad pass against Wolves away where O'Shea's played it short and Burs get caught. But I don't think there's any... I don't think it's necessarily that. I think that's perhaps what most teams would do in that situation, is pass it back, and it's just a bit of a head loss from Muric. So, I don't know how to feel about that, really.
Yeah, well, I guess it brings us on to the next question. I mean, we'd been screaming at the top of our lungs for Muric to get brought in again instead of Trafford all season, and it was obvious to everybody other than company, seemingly, that Trafford was struggling, and a lot of our problems this season had been down to some vulnerability at the back. Irrespective of two bad goals to concede over the space of two games, I still start with Muric in the nets of the next game. Sheffield United. I don't change him. I don't know how you feel about that, Tom.
I'm kind of ambivalent, really, to be honest.
Oh, oh dear.
No, I don't mean that in the sense of I don't care. I just mean basically I could see either side. Like, I think we look a better team with Muric in goal. Like, he is obviously better at what we want to do, which is pass the ball out. You know, he's better with his feet, albeit the fact that him using his feet has cost us in the last two games. I think if he'd have had sort of 28 games and made two mistakes, then, you know, it's maybe a little bit more kind of diluted, if that makes sense. But also equally, I think when you're making mistakes of that capacity, of that kind of magnitude, and as I say, it's not, I don't think he can hide behind, oh, it's the way we play, and you know, Bellamy saying, oh, it's not, it's our mistake, not his mistake. I don't believe that for a second. I think you could probably actually say that more about Trafford. You know, thinking about the Browning one at Palace, for example, where Trafford plays the ball short. I think when you're being asked to do something that you clearly can't do, that is probably more when you say it's not his fault necessarily.
Yeah.
Muric counteract that. You know, we know he's good with his feet and he's just, well, who knows what he's doing? Not concentrating enough. I think he probably is a bit too laid back sometimes. I remember the Watford home game last year. He made a complete rick. He had a shocking first half. He got hooked at half time. Company was saying afterwards he was ill. I think he was protecting him a bit.
Oh, personally. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, and it didn't surprise me when we looked to bring in a keeper in the summer. The problem that we've had is obviously the guy that we brought in isn't as good as Muric, and it's not saying Muric is perfect.
Yet. He will be better than Muric, Will Trafford. I'm sure of it. I think there's a talent there.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be as good as his feet as Muric.
Actually, to be fair, I'm not sure there's any other keeper that's as good as Muric is with his feet. That boy makes passes that he has no business as a goalkeeper making. I don't know how he finds them. He makes passes better than some midfielders, but yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but then at the same time, as I say, the mistake, he's cost us like 3 points in the last two games. There's no getting around that. There were his errors. And I think you can hide behind it, which the way we play and that.
I think it's just that
concentration. And if we're a team that doesn't score many goals, right? We didn't really get close to scoring at Everton. We had one shot on target maybe on Saturday. As I say, it's not Muric's fault that Fofana and Brun Larsen have missed sitters in the first half on Saturday. But when you nick a goal out of nothing with sort of 10, 15 minutes left in a really tight game and your keeper's doing that because he can't control the football properly, then if company turn around the next game and said, look, you know, you're making incredibly basic errors, you're supposed to be a Premier League goalkeeper, I'm going to give Trafford a go for the next one, because as much as the team looks worse with Trafford in it, and as much as Trafford can't do some of the things that Muric can do, I don't think he's made any errors that are as bad as those two from Muric.
No, he hasn't. There's been a few mistakes particularly around corners, where he's directly led to a goal where Trafford's either flapped or he's just not imposed his area well enough, or he's just too fragile against set pieces. But they're not individual howlers. They're just him not being fit for that particular part of his job. And some of that's down to physicality. Some of it's down to experience. Some of it's down to height. It's just, he's a young man that hasn't developed physically yet, and he will do. There's a good reason why keepers tend to get to their best qualities around 28 to 35. You know, that they need to have the physical presence. They need to develop fully, and they need to have that experience of seeing it all. And you know, Trafford's just not there yet. And to go from League One to face City at home in the Premier League was a shocking piece of man management by Vincent Kompany, in my opinion. Okay, staying a little bit closer to Muric then, the other change that we saw at the weekend was the forced change. Thankfully, none of us had to watch Dar O'Shea on Saturday, which was, you know, no disrespect to him. I'm sure he's a lovely, lovely footballer, and I'm sure he'll be fantastic in the Championship next season. But I didn't miss him at Saturday. It was an opportunity to see Estev play with Ekdal, which I think is another centre-half partnership that we've not seen this season. And a quick side point to that, Tom. Part of our many problems in defence this season has been a lack of a consistent centre-half pairing. We've seen so many different variations across the whole of the back four this season, and that cannot be allowed to continue the next time we're in the Premier League. But on the whole, a partnership that I very much enjoyed. I thought Ekdal was good. I thought he was solid. I thought he played very well against Estev. And I thought Charlie Taylor was slightly off in bits, but I thought Asenyon was much more improved. And we looked a bit stronger at the back. I don't know how you feel about this.
Yeah, similar to the Wolves game, again, I think there was a clear plan there to get the centre-halves up the pitch a lot more than they have been. And they did it well. I thought Ekdal played well. To me, all our centre-halves, there's not a great deal between them. I've seen a lot of people really raving about Esteban. I think he'll be a good player, but to me, he's not massively better than Bayer, for example. I think a lot of them have got the same kind of flaws. For me, Ekdal's a bit better than O'Shea, but companies obviously, as you say, decided that O'Shea's is one of his starting centre-halves. I thought they played well, but I think a lot of it was to do with the way we set up. I think it was the same in the Wolves game, and I think O'Shea played well in the Wolves game because of what they were being asked to do, which is get up high, win it up high, and the team looked better for that as well. And I think that's probably part of our kind of evolution tactically. We saw that at the start of the season. We were doing that against like Spurs and getting ripped to bits. And then we've perhaps been a bit too passive in some games. So, I don't think it was necessarily the personnel, because I don't think there's that much between Ekdal, O'Shea, Stev, to be honest. I think it was just the way we set up made them good for me personally. Although I do think that Ekdal is probably a better player for me than O'Shea. But then you have the problem of, you know, Ekdal goes off after an hour with cramp because he's barely played. And then there was no centre-halves on the bench.
Very bizarre situation. It feels to me, Tom, that we've got about 65 centre-halves at the club, but we never have cover for any of them ever.
Yeah, it was really weird what they did. Because, like, starting Bettino at left-back and playing Taylor there, I don't really understand that. I don't get why he does that. Then at half-time, Bettino was fine. I don't think he was bad in the first half. Then
playing well.
Don't understand why that was, unless Bettino had an injury. But then Taylor's your only defensive cover on the bench. So then you make this change at half time that seems a little bit arbitrary and pointless. And then your centre half goes off. I mean, if he's not fit enough to play more than an hour without cramping up, then surely you've got to have some cover on the bench for him. But it's this thing we've said all season. Players just disappear into this black hole and you don't know. They won't say if they're injured. I don't know if they're out of favour. It's like Bayer, he's been injured for months now. I guess. I don't know.
That is still an injury, I'm led to believe, is Bayer. That's quite a bad one. I don't think we'll see him again until we get to the start of the season.
But
you're right.
Where was Del Cuadra? I don't know. Was he injured? Was he just not picked? If so, why was he not picked?
Terrible, but okay.
As I say, I don't think there's much between them, the centre-halves. And then Alder Keel as well. I think he's really struggled when he's played. So I kind of understand why he's been bombed out a bit. It's a bit like, Trezor. He reappeared, didn't he, on Saturday, but he disappeared for 3 months before that. But you can kind of understand that because when they played, not been good enough. But, again, like you say, if you know that the centre-half who's playing is only fit enough to do an hour, and you must know, he hasn't played for months, as the Ekdal, he's been injured a lot of the season. So they must have at least a bit of an inkling that he ain't going to be able to do the 90 minutes.
Where's your
contingency plan? I'd love to know, but if you'd say in the press conferences, you know, before or after, here's an injury update. You know, Alder Keel's injured, Del Cuadra's injured, we're down. You know, I was hearing about Luton saying now they've got all these centre halves out injured. Rob Edwards is saying we're going to have to play so and so here and that. We don't get anything like that.
No,
I don't really understand why. I don't know what purpose it's been. It's obviously not helping because we're having a crap season, but I don't know, it was just something that annoyed me at the time. And
it's annoyed me all season, to be honest.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But if you'd have kept Taylor on the bench, then at least you could have brought on Taylor to play centre-half alongside Estev. But and I don't think it helped that we...
No, we ended up with Sander Berge at one point. Did he end up filling in for...
Square
pegs and round holes has been a story of our season. And it's just... I don't understand. To me, it feels like company just tinkers for the sake of it, because that's what trendy managers... and managers who know their squad very well can do, and it's the Pep way of doing things. And you just think, you haven't... For me, some of the criticisms, and I've given company a lot of space this season and a lot of time and a lot of goodwill to learn how to be a Premier League manager and to get this done properly. But some of the things that have frustrated me are he hasn't earned the right to play some of the formations that he's playing or tinker around with the squad to the extent that he has because of his refusal to do the basics first properly. Like these successful teams that can have utility players that can play in lots of different places, that can have a squad rotation and everybody's ready, they do that because they've done the good stuff first. They've laid the foundations. They've got the discipline. They've got an unbelievably solid understanding of where everybody plays and what the aim of the game is. And it feels to me that company's gone to step three without ever learning or implementing step one and two. And that's why it crumbles. And that's why it doesn't make sense, because we're trying to operate three steps ahead of where we're allowed to do. And where our technical ability allows us to. And it's just... there's just naivety everywhere, Tom. It drives me mad.
So it's a good point you make there. Just when you were saying that, it just brought to mind less the documentary when you were saying about how the players need whatever, 100 training sessions and whatever to learn the system. And like you say, we've played... I mean, I think the formation's been about the same the whole season, but the way we've played it's been different, definitely. Since Muric just came back in, the defence is 40 yards up the pitch again, where it's came back from the Trafford in. And the, like you said, the personnel chops and changes so much. The players are, you know, another good example of this kind of company roulette is Foster playing out on the right suddenly, and then he's coming in the...
And Odegaard playing up front. What?
Yeah. And then, but then on Saturday, Odegaard's on the right. I thought he did quite well out on the right, too. And as I say again, Brun Larsen and Fofana missing those two sitters, both from Odegaard crosses. We should have had a penalty that Odegaard would have won if VAR did its job. Without...
I've not seen any of that playback anywhere. It looked like a stone cold penalty to me from where I was sat, but I haven't. And none of the highlights that I've been able to watch back since, is anybody showing it?
Yeah, it was on Match of the Day.
I didn't watch Match
the
of the Day.
The guy comes. He kind of... I guess I could see why they didn't give it, but he comes across from the right. It's a really clumsy challenge. He's trying to sort of knock him off the ball, but he catches his leg, and then the follow through, the ball bounces off the defender's other leg, and it's a clumsy challenge. He's lucky to get away with it, and I think if they'd have given it, they wouldn't have overturned it on the AR. But yeah, anyway, so the point I was making was, Odegaard was having a good first half, and then the second half, he goes back through the middle, and Foster goes out on the right, and Foster does nothing the whole second half, and he's clearly not fit either. You know, he's playing out of position. He can hardly run, and then the sub ball goes up, and it's Fofana coming off. And like, I just don't understand. I genuinely don't know what the thought process is there. I'd love to know. Again, you don't hear about any of these kind of things in the press conferences. Boy, it was just bizarre. And you've got Benson sat on the bench. You know, I don't know if he's run over company's cat or something. You know, it's like, oh, company doesn't think he's good enough for the Premier League. Surely you give him more of a chance than he's had. I mean, you know. Even some of the games where he has had like 5 minutes, remember Man United, he come on and he's doing the Benson move, which is to cut inside and hit it on your left foot. We know what he's going to do every time. Odegaard tried it once or twice in the first half, didn't get anywhere with it. But at least when you do that, you know, something's going to happen. He did it against Wolves as well. He came on and put that ball in. I think we got a corner from it. When you're getting nothing from Foster, nothing whatsoever, because he's not playing his right position. Why would he not be a better option? It's just... it's frustrating. It's really frustrating, and
it feels like every single week we're asking these questions, and it's then just rinse and repeat. It drives me insane.
Yeah. And then he gives answers in the press conference like, oh no, Foster's been playing there the whole season. And you think,
I saw your tweet about that actually, and I was gonna ask you about this when we were talking about it. I mean, as you put in your tweet, that's just demonstrably wrong. Like, do you think we are stupid? Like, at what point do you not think that we're gonna, like, at what point do you think we're gonna turn on you and go, what are you talking about? We have got our own eyes. You know, you don't, fine, we're not as qualified as you are in terms of coaching, but we all watch a lot of football and we have done our entire lives. We know full well when somebody's playing out on the wing or not. And Foster has not been playing in that position this season. Like, what are you talking about, man?
And then you think, like, is he just lying or does he actually think that? And then you think, if he actually thinks that, then that's quite scary.
That's more worrying,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. This has been a lot of my frustration this season. It's the stuff you've seen, you just think, why? It's so obvious and you can't see it. And
yeah. I mean, I'm at this stage of the season now. I spoke when we were on the analysis show a couple of weeks ago with Rich, and I'd kind of got to the end of my tether with this. And one of the things that I've been critical of over the past few weeks is this idea that, oh, it's a 5-year plan and we got promoted ahead of schedule. You've got to give them time. And fine, I've bought into that. I understand it. But I've also been challenging that on the grounds that if you make wholesale changes at the end of each season, then you're not in a 5-year plan. You're in a perennial cycle of a brand new squad that needs time to gel together in these 100 training sessions, and we're never going to improve. But I just feel like this season there have been so many bad decisions. The recruitment's been so bad. The play's been bad. From the manager downwards, it's just been wrong decision after wrong decision that I'm actually going full circle now, Tom. And I just feel like we just need to start again. We need to pretend that this is 2 years ago. And we need to just start like we did when we got relegated under the Dyche, and it marked the end of the Dyche era. There's so much at the club that I just want out. I have no idea where the likes, I think Conor Roberts is going to be gone. I think he's burnt his bridges with him. But like Zorori and Benson and Twine, and like these players who were integral to our championships, and like, is there a role for them? Do they come back? Some of these players like Sander Berge, Foster, Amdunia, they're not going to hang around in the championship. They're going to go. Like, there is an uncertainty to the start of next season in the championship where we don't know the players we would maybe want to keep are not going to be here. But we've got an awful lot of dead wood that I would just be happy to clear out, Tom. I mean, are there any obvious players who, okay, let's not do this way. Let's not call out players and say, get rid. That sounds mean. Who do you consider in the current squad, our golden eggs, that you would want to keep to start again, to build the foundations of the squad? I'm starting off by saying I think both keepers are integral to that. That would keep Trafford and Muric.
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because the financial position that we're in now, we've spent so much in the summer on a load of rubbish, basically. The majority of the players that we signed have not appreciated in value, I think it's fair to say, this season.
That's wonderfully well put. You should be a politician, Tom Whittaker.
And I think we've overspent on Trafford. I think we've overspent on Trezor for sure. I don't think we're going to make our money back on Amdouni. We ain't going to make our money back on Ramsey. And it puts us in a really difficult position.
I'd forgotten all about Ramsey.
Yeah,
clean on forgotten it. He existed.
We've got so many players, haven't we? You think how many we've got out on loan. We're going to have a good, it's like 40, 50 players we've got in the first team squad when they all come back. So you're going to have to cut loads of them out. We're going to have to
sell at least a lot. Squad's going to have to go.
Yeah. And then you think, does he want to bring more in? I think knowing that we're going to have to sell in order to finance next season, you'd hope what we can do is sell off enough fringe players that we can be kind of reasonably okay financially. So you'd be looking at people, and I know you said not to name names, and I want to throw some of these names out. This isn't to be.
No, it's all right to say the fringe players that aren't part of this, that's fine. I don't want to pile on players who are already good. Players, like, they're fine. Name those.
People like McNally, for example, who's spent a bit of money on. He's not got near the first team. There's about 6 players ahead of him in the squad.
Yeah.
We could maybe make our money back on him. He's been playing in the championship the next last couple of years. Egan Riley, you know, is he going to get a chance? I wouldn't have thought so.
No, he
can. Twine, the people like Twine.
I'd bring Twine back, actually. I would bring Twine back. I think he's easy. I do. Obafemi. he can. I think he's a fringe player. Can go.
Well, the people that I'm thinking of now are the people who, as soon as we've gone up to the Prem, they've been immediately replaced, and you think that's because company doesn't rate them. But then it's like, but then are you thinking for to build a squad for the Premier League, or are you thinking let's just get out of the league? Because if you were thinking let's get out of the league, then you'd want Zorori and Benson in there, wouldn't you? Because they were brilliant in the champ last season. But then we're going to have to sell somebody. And then, like, I've gone way off your original question.
No, please go. This is great. Go.
But you'd be thinking people like Burge, wouldn't you?
He'll absolutely go.
I would love to keep him for next season. Burge.
We will. I'd love to. He's number one on my list, but there's no way we keep him.
I think Odibert. I think Kaliosho.
You don't think we'll keep those? I think we'll keep Odibert and Kaliosho.
Well, I'm saying these are the people that I'd like to keep.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
The trouble we've got is we need to sell someone, and then the people that are most likely to be sold are the ones that other teams will want, and the teams that other people will want are the ones that we want to keep, if that makes sense.
Okay, so, Amdouni. We could probably get rid of him.
Amdouni sticking around in the championship.
Nope. I can't see Foster sticking around. Foster won't.
No, though, because Foster, and through no fault of his own, he's obviously had a very stop-start season. And he looked really, really good at the start of the season, didn't he? He looked amazing. He did a brilliant job with him, because when we signed him in January, you were thinking, what the hell have we spent our money on here? But he looked fantastic at the start of the Premier League season. And then he's had a couple of injuries. He's obviously had the enforced timeout with his mental health issues. And since the Villa game, Villa away, he looked brilliant there. But this calendar year, he's looked really poor to me, to be honest. And again, I can't see a Premier League team coming in for him. A lot of these players, I can't see Premier League teams coming in for, to be honest. But the ones that I can are the ones that I'd like to keep. So Burge, Odibert, Kaliosho. start to run a bit dry after that. But then, because I think if you want to actually make any money on transfers, there are you going to have to sell. I think they're the teams that are going to get big bids.
Yeah,
and the only other way
Cullen
around
we keep. Cullen we keep, I think.
Yeah, I can't see any Premier League team coming in for Cullen. I think the only other way around it, if you want to make, let's say, I think it was 70 million we made when we came down last time. We ain't going to do that again because the squad's not as good. But let's say we aim to make like 30 million. Let's say But if you can sell 10 sort of squad players, let's say you get 3 million for Obafemi, 3 million for Twine, etc. You could probably have got 10 of them that you could shift on and make 30
million. That's a really good point, actually. Mm.
And that's what we really need to do is trim the squad down, I think. So, like, we need, you know, how many wings have we got? 8 or 9 or whatever it is.
56, I think. Something like that. Or Belgian.
Yeah, that's it. And what do we need, really? I think probably Goodmanson's going to go at the end of the season.
Corkle go, I suspect. Yeah. I think we'll keep Charlie Taylor for one more season.
I'd like to, but I don't know if he's a company player. That's another thing.
But the professionalism of this guy to do what he's done this season, I think, is earned. If somebody else comes in for him and he'd rather go, then I think we let him go, because I think that man, what he's done for us this season, has written a blank check to get whatever he wants next season. If he wants to stay with us another year, sign him. If he wants to go somewhere else, let him go, because he has been a profound professional for us this season. I think Jack Cork, Jay probably have had, like, the old guard have now had their time. Brownhill will stay. I think he's a great player in the Championship, so I think he will stay. I think we'll start. Well, I think our centre-half partnership next season will be Cullen and Brownhill again. I'm concerned that we don't have a third, with Sander Burge more than likely to go. But yeah, it all just feels very meh, doesn't it? So, okay.
It's really hard to know what kind of team we're going to have next season, I think. And
we'll go back into the loan market again, won't we?
Yeah, it would make sense, wouldn't it? But I'm hoping this summer we're not going to bring in sort of 10, 15 players like we have done the last 2 years. Because what we really need is to get rid of them, and we need to develop the ones we've got. Like you said before about, you know, you come up and replace the whole team. If we'd have kept that team together and developed it, I think even if we'd have gone down one, I don't think we'd necessarily have gone down as badly as we have done. But similar to when we came up the first time with Dyche, you know, we came back down, but we kept that team together and there were some really good players in there. Obviously, Ings and Trippier left, but we replaced them well, I think. And the majority of the team we had then we came back up and, you know, you got me, Heat, and
kept them for a decade, for the best part of a decade in the end.
Yeah.
We don't have that spine, and we don't have that relationship with the on the field to the fans either, and that helps, really does help. So, you know, we keep trying to make this message to the board. It's not about flags, it's not about drummers or creating fake atmosphere. There's a fundamental way that you keep your fans on board, and some of that's results orientated. There's nothing you can do about that, but a lot of it is a connection to the pitch. And if we're turning into a club that has to sell every summer, and there's going to be a high turnover of players because that's the business model that a side like Burnley has to do to survive in the Premier League, then you're going to have to find a way to connect with your fans, because that's not what we're used to, and that's not how us as a community club operate or have operated over the years. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting one. Good. Any final thoughts before we wrap up this week then, Tom? How are you feeling generally?
Yeah, I would say I was, you know, I've been called quite negative quite a lot of the season. I don't necessarily think I've been wrong in a lot of the things that I've said. I think I've been realistic, but perhaps I'm guilty of being a bit negative. But for me, I came off the Brighton game feeling relatively positive, actually, about next season.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I think we're a much better team than we were. You know, the first half of the season, we were genuinely awful. Then we had a bit of a renaissance. And then the Palace and the Arsenal games were some of the worst I've seen. And at that point, I was just like, oh, my God, I can't stand watching this anymore. But especially since you brought Muric back in, but even a couple of games before that, we're competing at least. We don't look like a team who's completely out of our depth anymore like we did at the start of the season. So I think the signs that there's a bit of evolution, some of the players have improved. I know we had a pop at O'Shea, but I think he has improved from where we started. I think there's been improvement in players like Trafford as well, as you know, as much as he's not in the team now. Odegaard, I think, has improved. So I think there's positive signs. I think, especially in the first half, we looked a good side. You know, we're still a long way off. We still can't put a 90-minute performance together. I still think the manager, there's big question marks there. And I'm
in the top
flight,
yes.
It'll be good in the Championship, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So there's still, I wouldn't say like everything's rosy and I'm thinking we're going to walk the league again next season. But the last few weeks made me a lot more positive than I was.
Same.
And I've just enjoyed going the last few weeks.
Oh, good.
I don't go to every game thinking, how many are we going to lose by today kind of thing, which is a big improvement. So, yeah, I wanted to end on a positive note at least.
I love it.
Very low, but I have felt better than the last few weeks.
Well, that is where we're going to end this week's podcast. This is your homework for this week, listeners. We want a petition going to basically say that the number one aim for Vincent Kompany and his team next season is to cheer Tom Claret up, because he has been miserable all season and the lad loves his football and we can't have him another season down in the dumps like we are. So a good ending, Tom. Thank you as ever for coming on and sharing your thoughts with this week's positive message and this week's podcast. My thanks also go to everybody else who has contributed to making this episode possible, to producer Matt, to Statman Dave and to the rest of the Known and Ever panel, for their contribution throughout the week behind the scenes that get us our material delivered to you. Please don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you're watching on YouTube. Also turn on notifications to get alerted to new shows. And you can find us on the podcast via your usual podcast provider. We'll be back the weekend on Friday night with the preview show for all of our Clarets travelling to Sheffield United on Saturday. My goodness, chapeau to you all. That's some commitment. Keep an eye out for socials for any news coming out of the team. But in the meantime, we'll be back to you on Friday. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the Known and Ever podcast. Until next time.
The Known and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Our host and editor is Natalie Bromley, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Rich Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, and Adam Dennett. Our music is provided by George Gaskell, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting knownandever.substack.com. Thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are proud to be associated with the TalkSport Fan Network.
Mom. mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.